So hi, my name is George A. I'm the co-founder and director of innovation at GoToGo Studio. We're based here in Chicago. I'm in Chicago right now. I'm one of the leadership at the studio, and I do guiding of projects, as well as a lot of early conversations with clients, framing what the project should be.
What does day-to-day look like for you?
A lot of email. My calendar is filled with meetings. Probably even more so now because of Zoom, but even before Zoom, it was mostly meetings and calls. And then most of the other time is spent with project teams, with sort of like keeping an eye on multiple projects as they go through their progression. I'd say I'm far less involved in the day-to-day work of a project than the teams are, but I am kind of guiding, I'd say, anywhere between 3 to 4 different projects at any one time. So I think a big part of the work is still designing the business. And what that kind of entails is like career development for some folks, internal strategy for like a development that we're trying to work on for a new initiative, or internal projects where we're developing a new piece of content for our website, for instance. So about a third is spent between business development, current projects, and then internal projects.
As I was reading about Greater Good, a phrase came up that I was intrigued by, and it might be totally obvious, but I'm wondering if you can speak to this idea of human-centered design. What does that mean in general, and what does it mean to Greater Good, and how does that apply to your day-to-day?
Human-centeredness or human-centered design is a pretty cornerstone component of the work that we do. I'd say without that training and experience, even the language, I'm not sure if there would be a business, if there would even be a GoToGo Studio. That being said, it's been 10 years of running this business, being fairly vocal about the critique of it and critique of human-centered design because of how it pertains to the work we do in the social sector. So our studio's trajectory could be marked by how we... it's almost like immigrants leaving a human-centered design mainland and then striking out on our own to set up a new island and trying to work out what are the traditions we want to keep and then what are the ones we want to no longer adhere to. And in doing so, when we let go of some traditions, do we have a strong understanding of maybe why? And what we've learned is how in some cases human-centered design can be quite harmful. It can be quite pejorative. It can center some people and not others, and can to a degree sort of exacerbate social issues that probably don't even need to be worked on any further. So what we've been trying to work out is what adjacent practices alongside human-centered design should we be better understanding. I don't think we could ever say that we are expert in any one of those other areas, like organizing, for instance. Like community organizing is an area that we have, I think, a professional crush on, but it wouldn't be fair to say we are like practicing organizers the way that the people who do that full time have that discipline well under control. But we are fans of and appreciate those other disciplines alongside human-centered design.
Why are you so invested in thinking this way?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a few different threads here. One is I got shown, I think, from my family and my dad in particular, that there is a pursuit of earning a living that specifically is creates as little harm as possible. And to make your money in a way that is helps others maintain their principles. So one interpretation of that is, well, then I should probably become a doctor one day. And while I, for about a half a year, I think I struggled thinking about it in high school and not making it through to college and failing miserably, kind of going down that medicine-related path, realizing, well, I don't think I'm going to be, I'm not going to be able to, I don't have pre-med written all over me. I'm like not really the right fit for this. So if I'm going to be a designer, which is kind of this thing I've actually wanted to do, how can I adapt that path I'm taking to still adhere? And that's really hard to do, it turns out, because being a designer typically means you're making money for other people. You're usually using design for some commercial end. There's almost no way of avoiding it. So for a good 10 years of my career, leaving college, was spent doing that. And I think I realized that I don't know if I want to keep pretending that it's not bothering me anymore. And those moments along the way of making money for commercial clients, I started to notice how it was a little weird that we would tell others publicly, here's the work we do that has some social benefit. And then the stuff we don't talk about for BP or ConAgra or like frozen pizzas, we just like conveniently don't talk about as much. Like we just like don't bring it up. And I thought, well, that's weird, isn't it? That we're like very deliberately vocal and we'll like do everything we can to avoid any issue of an NDA. And in others, we'll hide behind the NDA very conveniently. Why does this have social cachet and this one doesn't? Why does this one we want to promote, this one not? And how do we talk about it amongst ourselves? So when I worked in these commercial studios, I kept noticing this double logic. And it just didn't seem to comport with me anymore.
You mentioned your family before. Can you tell me where you grew up and what were your hobbies or like favorite activities as a kid?
So I grew up in England, in the south coast of England. We moved as a family when I was very young from Burma. One of, I think, only a handful of other Asian faces I think I saw outside my family meant there was a lot of assimilation to a British childhood and upbringing, which has its own issues. But then in terms of things that I wanted to do, I think there was a real attraction to wanting to draw or build things. But I don't think I'd understood that that was a career path, because I think I was, again, sort of carrying over so much of this strongly felt desire to fit into a Asian immigrant mold of becoming a doctor. So I kind of came to design very late. And even now, I think I still carry a lot of hang-ups about whether I see myself as a designer, whether I identify as one, and whether I feel confident about saying it. I do think, though, Hank, growing up in this Burmese Buddhist household definitely shaped, I think, my idea of what a career would look like. And I think it's this braiding of wanting to have some larger goal beyond just making money, but also wrestling with whether I have to make something in order to live in this world. So how can I marry some of those goals together has been, I think, the struggle. So I think if I did allow myself to think about something, probably making toys or like designing, you know, fun things or like mechanical objects, because I enjoyed a lot of that. You know, I put all that aside because I thought, well, that's cute, but that's never going to be a job. Obviously, I have to do something else. And it's funny that I've ended up coming back to it so often, because I feel like there is a certain affinity to it that I still enjoy. What's interesting now is that I don't design stuff. You know, that's not sort of even what I aspire to. It's now, I think, looking at it at a slightly meta way, which is if design is capable of designing things and shaping and influencing things, the question becomes, what should those things be? Is it enough to simply design stuff anymore, but rather the systems in which stuff is either created or the systems in which people operate? And that sort of like escalation, as it were, it was definitely not something I thought you could do. There's no pretense of when I was a kid, I wanted to be a systems designer. There's nothing like that, you know, because I got surrounded by a lot of really smart thinkers, system thinkers, when I was at this big design studio. And that really helped shape and continues to influence the role of what a designer can be. And I think, again, going back to this idea of being a critic of it, I've benefited so much from learning how to be a designer, think like a designer, that when I apply to myself and to the job I have, that's how I've ended up here. Because I go, huh, if you apply the ability to create new things and you apply to a career, could that not then shape what you do with design that you've been studying or training in? I think it can. And that's where I've ended up thinking, huh, maybe we should design other things rather than injection molded plastic objects or apps or phones and such.
Do you have any like experiences from your schooling that particularly sticks out as like informative to your current, where you are now, whether that's in your job or in your life in general?
I never did my master's, so I only had an undergrad. So I don't have a lot of schooling as compared to a lot of my teammates, actually. But I think I might reference maybe what we talked about earlier, this idea of like test prep and disentangling some of the self-image one has based on test results. I think it's less important to describe sort of its impact on me, which is that it wasn't great, but actually just how common it is to so many people that one self-image and perhaps even like the story around you in your family based on these test scores can haunt you for a very long time. And then it seems like in some other families where those test scores weren't as sticky and the stories around them weren't as sticky, some people are sort of like not burdened by the stories as much. and perhaps therefore are given, you know, new chances, different chances. So I can't help but think, when we think about the work we do as a studio, how much of the work we do in the social sector intersects with stories about people, have nothing to do with inherent worth, but actually to do with randomized things like a test one day, or a parking ticket, or getting arrested at a stop sign. Like, all of these randomized events can shape and influence people's impression of you, and therefore a group of people. I feel like a lot of our work is about trying to get below the story that everyone knows to work out what is the actual story happening in this particular case with this family in this moment. And a lot of those stories are very different than the more common story that's out there.
I mean, I sort of have to ask, at your work, as you and your co-founder and partner are thinking through, how are you not so mentally tired all the time? I feel like this kind of work, what do you do to keep yourself?
We are pretty tired. I'd say it's pretty exhausting. I don't think it's that we're not. I hear from my team a lot that they are exhausted before the pandemic, and that they've said when they've worked in other design studios that this work feels different here, that the work of a 40-hour week feels more like a 60 to 80-hour week, if only because the work is pretty heavy. I hope that doesn't sound too depressing. It's not as though, you know, work in a commercial setting isn't hard, but I think if you're designing, let's say, packaging for consumer packaged goods or like a fast food brand, I don't know if the weight of, you know, developing color material finishes is going to sit with you over a weekend the way that understanding the housing rights for one type of family versus another is just there. And that no matter how much work we do, we might make a tiny dent. Being exposed to some of these social issues is both exhausting and also doesn't just go away, because the project, you know, this is so sad, despite the project wrapping up, it still persists. These issues sort of persist perpetually. It is unlikely that any one project we do is just like solve this stuff. But I also know that our studio and everyone that works here, I think, can't really quite stand watching it happen without doing something. So I don't know for my team, but I know for myself, that's very motivating. And that's very much a driver of wanting to do this, because I think the alternative is, I can't really stand the alternative. If anything, that's what we did. The alternative was to just do the work we did before, was to almost like pretend that this stuff isn't happening, or to pretend that this and that we're not impacted by it.
Do you and your colleagues have any sort of self-care rituals that help you with doing this kind of heavy work?
Yeah, I mean, I think our team have a variety of self-care methodologies, and we have tried our best to figure out like what are even affordances as a studio in terms of mental health and other self-care needs. And we've been, as a policy, for instance, just been very flexible in how people want to spend their education budgets and self-care budgets that we have for teammates. So whether that's like a gym membership or a meditation app or just straight up paying for therapy, there's a lot of flexibility, which I think we concluded was the most autonomous way of helping people decide how they want to spend those budgets. I think one thing that we're trying to maintain is interesting for me and maybe for others is the idea of just autonomy in general, that if given more autonomy than not, what would one do with it? And if we trust that people make the right decisions based for what they have, their own needs, on their own assessment of their needs, you might be surprised at how much power people have if got given the autonomy based on their own assessment. And if you run a studio from that perspective, I think you end up with a really interesting place to work, because you have people who are voluntarily there, who could in many cases go work somewhere else at a moment's notice. And so the challenge becomes, can we create an environment as a studio that has as much autonomy as is afforded, so that we can get and engage with the very brightest minds who have then the ability to speak freely. So like that's a very delicate balance, but I feel like that's one of the things that we've been, that we take a lot of pride in trying to create here.
Do you have words of advice, words of wisdom for people who are thinking about a career in design?
What I was maybe surprised by was just how much the current career that I have is shaped by that quiet little voice that I used to hear, certainly before becoming like a working professional, and then certainly during my working professional career, before starting the studio, how much that voice didn't go away. And I think I was surprised that if you give it a little bit of space, that voice can grow. And perhaps if I can encourage others to say, hey, give that voice a little bit of a chance, but you might find that you were not alone in that voice having questions or moments of reflection or pauses or like concerns, because I think everybody else does, but more likely everyone has been conditioned to not listen to it. So I would encourage actually to like try to write it down, maybe quietly over a coffee break, ask, hey, do you have any questions or concerns about this project? Because I had some concerns. I think that is actually really good practice, because at some point you will in your career be in a position where actually your decision about whether to proceed with something will impact a lot of people who also have those same questions but don't feel comfortable bringing it up. So I hope that as people progress in their careers, naturally that they get more power, but they are open to that voice that they've had and that others probably have as well.
You seem to identify as a pissed off optimist.
Mm.
Tell me more about that.
That's a phrasing that my co-founder gave. It's a very handy descriptor for our team and for us who are legitimately upset about how the world is, but not so upset that they are just tied up in knots as to not what to do. You know, just so angry that they can't progress, but they're not so optimistic on the other hand that we just think we're going to sunshine and rainbows our way through this. We can't just, you know, positive thinking alone won't fix this. We have to be able to balance both, which means when we tackle things and start them off, we have to have, I think, some hope, some sense that we can try, it's worth trying, but that the reason we have to try is because it's shit right now. Like, things are broken, and not being afraid to say it. And I think that if you're just, there's a phrase I heard from someone like toxically positive all the time. I don't think it really helps. I think you deny the reality for a lot of people who where things really are quite misaligned. So trying to be not so upset, not so positive, but to balance both, I think is a way where we can not lose ourselves completely in this heavy work, and also try to progress